My name is Amy Sharon, and I'm at the University of Texas at Austin. And would you mind introducing yourself for the recording?
Yes, I'm Janice Maurer Rice. I'm retired, but I was the founder of the Purdue graduate program in rhetoric and composition for many years, and had also rhetorics, about 13 summer rhetoric seminars. And so that's Wayne.
Excellent.
And I have my husband sitting next to me here.
That's awesome. I bet you this is not his first RSA either, is it?
It's the
second one?
Second.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I think there's computer science conferences every once in a while.
Neat. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So tell us about when you first joined RSA. When was that?
When it began. Whenever that was. Yes. The first one, 86, 50 years ago.
Right.
This is the anniversary. And so that's why I came. We came back because they wanted to hear from me about the beginning. And that's largely why I came. And secondly, but probably more importantly, to see so many former students and friends, I came. And because I am now 85 years old, and I'm not probably going to attend too many more.
I get it. So how did you first learn about the organization? I know that you've been around since the inception, but can you talk about some of the ideas that might have been stirring around, or how even the organization came to be?
I think the development of a development of our SA came through many much talking after the meeting. There were some meetings at the Four Cs for the English group that carried forward RS to to gratify it and to establish a newsletter and all of those things. And I was present for those as well. But the actual having of the of the rhetoric seminar society came with some a group started to get to know each other and felt that there was some compatibility and we should have something to represent what seemed to be the beginning of a field. And people I knew, people like Dick Young and Ross Winterode and Ed Corbett and George Hills, all those people were friends. And we were meeting sometimes at the Four Cs, but we wanted to have a society for, so we were part of helping to boost that. And we wanted also to be connected with communication, because communication was the field that continued rhetoric all along. Of course, rhetoric was a subject all along the way. They had continued it, English had not. And we were the English group. And we,
in our field, right? All the new materialisms and the direction that things are going. So,
we wanted to get with the communication people.
I'm so fascinated.
And so this,
some of the key people.
This first meeting was during the early 50 years ago.
There was a very wonderful professor.
was the grand start. Just as, I think just that first meeting was to see how many people we really had who was interested, and people were meeting here and there. But to have it come together was important. And so that's that was a real effort. And our Rhetoric Society first meeting was rather informal. We had a lot of just people talking to each other and so forth. You know, some speech, but and so.
But after that, and then
so that was.
So I saw these rooms, and what great scholar,
part of our,
there was a sw-
our thinking, and I'm going to be in this next panel the first 25 years, and I, so I want to say that that the appearance of rhetoric, its entry back into English was very went on for some time and through various personal experiences, and mine was as I will say later. I had been teaching since 19. I was started teaching in the 1950s.
Yeah,
I never heard of rhetoric. There was the education system didn't include rhetoric.
Oh, like people,
like
there
were real people. And Toulmin, and I was.
And then I so I was teaching composition and literature, and
went
to St. Louis University
to
get a master's.
Debbie Haughey, I'm like, I get tongue-tied. I'm like,
and I took two courses.
I'm
a Jesuit called Walter Fong.
I've heard of him.
If you have heard of him, you know that he was one of the inspirations. He had just completed a few years before that his dissertation on Peter Ramus at Harvard.
Right. Yes,
and of course, Ramus was the one that shrunk rhetoric, took out invention, and from it, and committed rhetoric to
style. You've kind of answered this stuff. What was
that? That's a reduction there, but you know,
trace out sort of its discipline?
Learned
of
all
maybe
that. And I became interested in rhetoric. So then I tried to work on my own. And I got some suggestions from Father Walter on. And doing that, my next move that led to something was that I then moved to the University of Michigan and applied for a doctorate.
So there wasn't a resistance. There was just once the argument.
I had an interview with Warner Rice, who was then a long time chair of the English department.
For the coalition,
he said, "What was I interested in studying?" And I said, "Rhetoric."
of
he was quite surprised, but he said.
Right.
Said, interestingly, this department used to be called the Department of Rhetoric.
Neat.
And
we're not welcome to go because we're men.
Anyway, so he, but it is not now, he said. But I will help you to put together a curriculum of courses and so forth.
You guys were like,
So well, I wasn't sure, so I said, well, let's just sit in the back.
You can get your doctorate, but you can end up having a dissertation about murder, which is what I did, and that was the dissertation on invention. And so that was another move toward down the road of rhetoric. And
Penn State used to have a summer conference. And then,
after that, see some. What happened?
She's still doing good work.
While I was studying
at
Michigan, I did attend a conference at the Four Seas, and I was looking for something about rhetoric, and I found
blood sport sometimes.
I really found very little. No, I found probably nothing until I hit this one panel, and it had something to do with rhetoric.
What panel was that?
Well,
you get into it?
Yeah, I'm coming to it. Yeah, it was a panel. I couldn't tell you the title of it now, but it was three people on it: Richard Young, Pete Becker, and Jim Moffat. I went to the panel. It was wonderful. And I went and introduced myself, and the four of us went off to have a coffee, and we sat for quite some time talking about rhetoric. So that was very exciting, and it gave me a sense that there was really, there were really some people that were doing rhetoric. And then, so at that point, we're coming close then to the Rhetoric Society, and I had been interested in how there was a critical mass of people that were interested in there was a critical mass of people to support starting a society like this. And this was beginning to unfold for me up until then. And then the Rhetoric Society brought many people together, and from communication as well. And so that happened. And the last thing about the notion of critical mass, I'd like to add here, because in each of the cases that I just talked about, they came unexpectedly. And this last thing came unexpectedly. Shortly a year after the first meeting of the society, I got a phone call from Barbara Hamilton, who was taught at Oakland University in Michigan, and I was at the University of Detroit. And she said she wanted to study rhetoric, and she wanted to go to USC, where Ross Winterer was starting the first rhetoric program. And Ross was a friend of mine, and so anyway, she said she couldn't because her family, raising a family, and so I said, well, I'd look into it, and I thought, what is there in the Midwest for people to learn about rhetoric, which was nothing. And so
at the end of 15 minutes, even if I think I've done that, I'm done. Now, if you want to
work
your own business,
so come hell or high water, I got the idea of having a rhetoric seminar in the summer that would get rank rhetoric graduate credit it would have faculty that were beginning to do good research in rhetoric at it to teach. And I asked Ross when around to be direct with me. I got the university to authorize it. And no small thing. And
with the Greek?
And I and so that
even though they're different, people say what, you know, but
we had the first rhetoric a seminar. Ross and I wondered if we'd have anybody, and especially in Detroit, for 2 weeks. We had 61. Wonderful people, Louise Phelps and many others. And we had, and so
this was from Brother Donovan.
Subsequent to that, there ended up being 13 summers of rhetoric seminars, and I think 12,264 or something like that of people coming to it. And these people came from the U.S., all over the U.S., all different levels of people. And we had people from Canada.
It
was very interesting. East Canada and some center. And so we had the first summer seminar. And so I think that that's what I would like to say, because I believe that these people were very helpful to the Rhetoric Society, because they came to be enriched and to enrich and to create that part of that mass.
Okay, I got to type back.
Critical mass of people and rhetoric.
It sounds like it emerged kind of organically and kind of just came about, rather than somebody trying to form it with their own intention.
It came because a woman called, of a phone call from a woman.
Well, relatedly, I know that you've mentioned a few key people that you have worked with in the field, but I want you to maybe tell us a little bit about that idea of personal relationships, or that idea of, you know, like knowing people and talking to people, and like, what are some of the maybe prominent memories you have? You mentioned one about the SEAS conference that you went to, but
yes, and then. There was one group of us that at the Four Cs is where it continued between major sessions. We had a table. We had dinner every time, and it was Ross and Norman went around, and Ed Corbett. And Dick Young, myself, and George and Mary Yost. And we really enjoyed getting together and having that dinner
Rhetoricians
at the Four Cs. That was a nice set of personal relationships. And then some of the people that came to the seminars became friends, like Louise. We had Jim Kennedy and
like each other.
Well, we should be able to
practice that, because after all, we're the
anyway, wonderful people that
I met
between meetings.
I haven't really seen any other conferences where I've been shocked.
But Dick and I remain very good friends.
Over the years, Richie became my good friend.
And Ed Corbin, of course, was a good friend, and a very nice group of people. We had a in the early times we had a
professor from Gordon Room, one of the teachers, we have two more questions.
I had just sort of local people as professors there, Dick Young and Gordon Roman, came from Michigan State, and he became a friend, and as did, you know, so many. Then the, in 1980, was hired by Purdue to start one of the first rhetoric programs at Carnegie Mellon, of course, where I was working. And so I moved to Detroit to start the rhetoric program there. And I'm in the midst of start of writing a book that I can't get to very often, but writing a book about the setting of that program and what it entailed, including building the library.
Things you wouldn't think of exactly.
Yeah. And of course, creating the courses. I wanted to have as one of the basic ideals of it, being able to, to some extent, to do research and read research in different kinds of discourse about rhetoric. So one of the things that I mean, historical work, and theory building, and the hardest for several reasons was empirical research on writing. And we really didn't have anybody there in the English department. But anyway, she's right here. I'm giving away my soul.
All right, so you were talking about empirical research and writing.
So there was a gentleman, a professor in science, who was doing interesting work, and so I contacted him.
There's no signs anywhere that this is happening.
Okay.
I told the guy
he offered
the registration
to team teach a course with me.
Bill
Asher was his name.
That's more,
and so
you set up for 10 o'clock and
anyway,
yes.
Just,
I think he might
just offer to do that as an extra in his.
I know that for a fact.
Of things, of course, is,
no, you're not.
And he brought the knowledge of
I told her
the
it was
empirical
today,
work and
oh
actually
gosh,
the works in rhetoric that were being done empirically, and we made it.
That's
a
neat.
A nice course for. I think we made a course for students. He stayed there. And taught that course with me for about three or four years, and then we hired Patricia Sullivan from, who was Dick's student at
the
email. And she's still there. She has a program now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so so that was that was beginning of. Getting getting those courses, and we also have a pedagogical.
There you go.
Cool.
You will be.
We didn't want the thing. We didn't want.
So Jen's
to have rhetoric identified with pedagogy only.
And you are really.
But it was, you know, partially, but it was, it was research.
Right.
And different kinds. Inquiry, so that they left. And those that came early on, we've had excellent students for years and years, but they spread across that inquiry. Platform and did, and some did various used various kinds of inquiry for dissertations, but all that if they didn't use it, at least they could read it and be favorable toward it and see what it was contributing, each of the inquiries. So anyway. So that was another aspect of the beginning of the program that had to be done.
That's so neat.
And it we had new faculty. We had used some. Muriel Harris was with the writing lab, and we had very good faculty. We a number of years later, we hired Jim Berlin to be there, and he was a great asset for us and others. And in the department, so I could name, but you know, didn't come prepared for to.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So what? How have you seen this society itself change over these many, many years that you've been a part?
Well, I think that I just came from a meeting of the fellows, and I think both communication and English have come together well, and communication had been keeping the history and research on the history alive, which he knows, and then he came over to be in English also. But anyway, people, so that there was more intertwining, but that took time for people to get to know each other and to be interested in the research of the other. And so I think that's happening. It, we have, of course, in size, it's grown a lot.
Yeah.
And the leadership has been very good all the way along. And it is, it's so set up that leadership will have people from communication and
coming,
and so that there's always that kind of mixture that's so important here. And communication, at least at Purdue, has been. I've been retired for a while, so I'm not really up to date, but gone in the direction of empirical research and has not had much in history. More recently,
do you remember? Were there moments you remember about that first conference? You
had lost a couple of good historians to retirement and not replaced, and so on. So there, it's not as much as a as otherwise. Ed Chiappa was had come. I don't know if you know Ed Chiappa. He's been a communication historian, and he had been hired, and he found out we were hungry for history. So he came and over to us and did some teaching, and I usually invited him to, as I was teaching the historical art, to give some lectures in my class. That has changed there. To anchor this idea of all the modes of inquiry, we have five recurring courses that do that. He would come over and do some the historical part there, and he loved to come over to us. And he, when he came to, he would come to the Four Seas, and so I just love coming.
I mean, we're a fun group, right?
Yeah. So and he said, I'd like to come over, because there's nothing much going from here. But anyway, that's just at Purdue. And he's long gone from there. He's in the East Coast.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, I have two more kind of, like, they're related questions, if you have just a few more minutes.
Yeah, I think so.
So what do you expect or hope for in the future of this organization? It can be both like an expectation that you may not necessarily hope, as well as, you know, hope or wish for the organization.
Yes. I think that that it has it could have a little bit more political work done for us. Not too much, but but it could offer some discussions along those lines, or branch out there. And I think there is some effort to have a more local sort of social meetings of small groups of people, and also and so because we have this large group, but the only other way would be at the local universities. But when people are retired and gone on, or they don't necessarily want to connect that way. But socially, and we do have some things in summer, and we have we're trying to get some more financial support, and that is very helpful to move us into various directions.
Your methodologies
and
legitimizing these lines.
So that's
continue to write about.
In some parts of the U.S. and some universities, rhetoric has yet to break through and be acceptable.
Just a question, like, emerges out of the culture.
And especially, unfortunately, by
in
English departments. I was just talking to someone.
The culture,
why not? Who is having trouble with it? Who is in education?
Yeah,
who is doing rhetoric through education? And it's not the English folks are kind of haughty. Haughty, but
I've seen it.
But also they're going down. And so this is sad.
Right.
And so I hope that is worked out better in places. Some places it has, and some it hasn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and one last related question. I think this is a good segue, right, from what you just said. So what advice, or maybe what kind of course of action would you recommend for, those of us who are new in the field, and maybe this is our first or second RSA, what kinds of things should we be looking to do in order to get RSA to, continue on to this place that you're talking about?
I don't know. The panels that are available depend on people who send in, to be on the panels and suggest the panels. And this is a very large convention with a lot of very varied and interesting panels.
What they studied in graduate school.
I think that
getting
oneself for younger people in the organization, getting them to assume positions of leadership is important, very important. Volunteering and even donating. All of which are, are necessary for keeping an organization going well. And so I think we have a RSA has made great strides. But I think its powers are not extending out enough.
Oh my gosh, his lecture notes.
And that could be done
for our rhetoric.
It grows in younger people.
Yeah.
Take it to all different places and use it in different ways. And so I think your generation is the hope of the organization and the road. And this is very amazing what you're doing. This is very a very good thing, because I don't know where these are going, but they could be available. They're trying to capture some history,
right?
and some of the ideals that people had.
Right.
And also see that they could use the power of the organization. Who knows where? That's the future.
Right. And it's interesting that the organization was not, like, the organization didn't come first, right? It was, like, these people, like you said, that collectivity that came out. And I think that's so neat. Well, that's all I have. Is there anything else that you wanted to say that you didn't get to?
You were a great interviewer because I came in cold.
That was so good. Thank you so much, Janice.